I think that the probe is a disaster for our country. I think it's kept us apart. It's kept us separated. There was no collusion at all. Everybody knows it.
The probe. That was President Trump in his joint press conference with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Monday. He's, of course, referring to Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russia's interference in the 2016 election. So far, 32 people have been charged in connection with the investigation, including 12 Russians just last Friday. When asked outright about possible extradition of those 12 individuals, President Trump deflected. The press conference only heightened questions and speculation about the progress of Mueller's investigation. But Garrett Graff, a contributing editor for Wired and the author of The Threat Matrix, Inside Robert Mueller's FBI, says there are things we can learn from what Mueller has done publicly in order to better understand where this probe might be headed next.
We talk about the Mueller probe as if it's one thing, but probably the best way to think about it is as five separate investigations in one. There's a bucket of investigations that Mueller is leading that's focused on money laundering and past business deals. That's where he's charged Paul Manafort and Rick Gates. Then there's a part of the investigation that focuses on Russian information influence operations. That's where he's charged the Internet Research Agency. Then there's a separate line of investigation that focuses on the active cyber penetrations by Russian intelligence. That's where we saw Friday's indictment against the Russian intelligence service, GRU. And then there's a fourth category that is what I would sort of describe as sketchy campaign contacts. That's where we've seen the charges against Michael Flynn and George Papadopoulos for their contacts with Russian officials during the campaign and during the transition. And then sort of there's the fifth area, which is obstruction of justice. And that's, you know, the president's role in obstructing the preceding four investigations into the Russian attack on the 2016 election.
The special counsel's office actually declined to comment on yesterday's Putin and Trump summit in Helsinki. But I'm wondering if any of what was said, based on your analysis of what Mueller's done so far, could be used to strengthen any of these five areas that Mueller's currently investigating.
It's hard to say. One of the most interesting questions for the investigation coming out of the press conference is we've seen former CIA Director John Brennan and former Director of National Intelligence Jim Clapper say that the U.S. has evidence that Vladimir Putin was personally involved and approved these attacks. So part of the question coming out of the press conference yesterday is, what is that evidence and are we going to see that become public? Will the president's denials and statement that he believes Putin over the FBI and the intelligence community hasten that information, that evidence of Putin's personal involvement in this attack becoming public?
And we also, you mentioned earlier when we were talking about the five different areas here, we know that some former Trump campaign officials are, in fact, cooperating with Mueller, including Michael Flynn, as you mentioned. Do we know whether or not any information that they've had has played into this, any of the charges that we've seen announced so far?
Yeah, this to me is one of the most interesting questions of the investigation as it's unfolding right now, which is that we know that George Papadopoulos, Michael Flynn, and Rick Gates have all cooperated with Mueller's investigation. And we know from the plea deals that they took that they actually traded important information for lenience in their own cases. And we have no reason to believe that any of that information from Papadopoulos, Flynn, or Gates has become public. And that to me says that some of the biggest steps are still ahead of us, which is, this is information that Mueller thought was deeply critical and important to his investigation, that he was willing to trade pretty significant jail time in some of these cases with Papadopoulos, Flynn, and Gates in order to have become part of his investigation. And so we haven't seen that become public. And that's one of the most important pieces of information that we know, that Mueller knows, that we don't know.
We're talking Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election, and Garrett Graff is with me. Garrett, is there anything that suggests that Mueller is looking into whether Russian money might have influenced the 2016 elections?
Yeah, and that's one, you know, we don't know exactly where this investigation is going to go and who it will eventually wrap up. But what we do know is that there are very significant lines of inquiry that Mueller has shown a longstanding investigative interest in that have not become public in any way. And one of those is, as you said, where Russian money has come and gone. Even actually this week, we saw the arrest in D.C. of Maria Butina, a Russian national charged with conspiracy to be an unregistered foreign agent of the Russian Federation, which is government speak for a Russian spy. And one of the things that appears that she's very much involved in was helping to build relationships between the GOP and the NRA and Russia. And we know that Mueller has been interested in the way that money has flowed potentially from Russians into the 2016 campaign and potentially to the NRA as part of its pro-Trump election spending in 2016.
And we recently saw Trey Gowdy at a congressional hearing recently get very upset about the timeline of this investigation. Do we have a sense of when Mueller might be looking to close this investigation?
We don't. This is sort of hard for, I think, a lot of people who don't follow federal investigations closely to realize. But Mueller's team is actually moving very rapidly for a federal investigation. You know, federal investigations are long, slow, in-depth, thorough processes. And that for Mueller to have done all that he has in really sort of 13 or 14 months at this point is a remarkable speed and agility. You know, many times when you see these investigations go on, you know, they can take 3, 4, 5 years. And then sort of one of the ironies of Trey Gowdy complaining about investigations is that he was the one who led the congressional Benghazi investigation that lasted, you know, 3 or 4 times as long as Mueller's probe has lasted and brought no criminal charges whatsoever. Whereas Mueller, you know, barely a year into this has brought nearly 200 criminal charges at this point.
Garrett Graff from Wired had one more take on the ongoing Mueller probe. He said Monday's comment by Vladimir Putin saying he wanted Donald Trump to become president backed up information the U.S. intelligence community has outlined before.
Remember that sort of what we are learning so far is that it appears that there were multiple stages of this Russian attack, that it didn't necessarily start out as a way to help Donald Trump because that was seen as such a long shot in 2015 and early 2016. And so it began really as an attack on the Democrats, as a way to undermine Hillary Clinton and to undermine Americans' confidence in their own electoral system. From there, though, over the course of the spring and particularly into the summer and the fall, you did see, according to what we know publicly, a marked change in the Russian attack to not just be an anti-Clinton effort, to be a pro-Trump effort. And certainly Mueller's indictment on Friday begins to outline some of that increased operational tempo that we saw by the Russian intelligence services in June, July of 2016. And so that is where you really do see that Russian preference for Donald Trump begin to kick in. Remember, that happens to overlap, and we don't know whether there's a significance to this right now, but that happens to overlap with the period where there was that infamous Trump Tower meeting with Don Jr., Paul Manafort, Jared Kushner, and some Russian Kremlin-connected officials.
That, again, is Garrett Graff, a contributing editor for Wired and the author of The Threat Matrix, Inside Robert Mueller's FBI. And following yesterday's press conference with President Trump and President Putin in Helsinki, there's been a wave of backlash from both Democrats and Republicans. Former CIA Director John Brennan tweeted, quote, "Donald Trump's press conference performance in Helsinki rises to and exceeds the threshold of high crimes and misdemeanors. It was nothing short of treasonous. Not only were Trump's comments imbecilic, He is wholly in the pocket of Putin. Republican patriots, where are you? Senator John McCain called it, quote, disgraceful, and Senator Bob Corker said he was, quote, disappointed. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told reporters that the Russians, quote, are not our friends, and I entirely agree with the assessment of our intelligence community. Neil Cavuto, a host on Fox News, also had strong words.
That's what made his performance disgusting. I'm sorry, this is the only way I feel. It's not a right or left thing to me. It's just wrong. A U.S. president on foreign soil talking to our biggest enemy or adversary or competitor, I don't know how we define them these days, is essentially letting the guy get away with this.
And here's former U.S. ambassador to Russia, William J. Burns.
I mean, I think that press conference was the single most embarrassing performance by an American president on the world stage that I've ever seen anyway.
One defender, Vice President Mike Pence.
Truth is, over the last week, the world saw once again the President Donald Trump stands without apology as leader of the free world.
President Trump appeared on Fox News last night in an interview with Sean Hannity where he doubled down on his belief that Russia wasn't involved in election interference.
One thing you know, if they had it, it would have been out.
He said it was nonsense.
He said it's nonsense, is right. And he also said there's absolutely no collusion, which you know, and everybody that watches your show knows. And I think most of the country knows. And Tucker, standing right over there, definitely knows because he gets it. He's one of the people that get it.
And what about you? Do you get it?
Hi, this is Kathy from Logan, Ohio. I am stunned and appalled. Very, very undemocratic. It is almost veering, and I've never said this, on treason.
This is Donna Kalame in San Francisco. I'm terrified by the possibility of a Trump-Putin world. Uppermost on Trump's mind was that the United States and Russia have 90% of the world's nukes. What a peaceful mindset. It appears that little Putin has gullible tied down.
I'm calling from St. Paul, Minnesota. It's very obvious to me that he's using the whole Russian thing and this conversation as a platform to once again say that there is no collusion, and that is what he's doing. And that's what he's using it for, and it's a totally personal thing. It has nothing to do with a lot of the other things that people are trying to analyze.
Hi, my name's Theodore Corwin from Costa Mesa, California. It's really time for the American right to rethink itself and rehumanize itself.
We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.